Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well as we get closer and closer to the weekend. Another big week of high school and college football, and we'll talk about that and much more. Let's see. For Major League Baseball, one wild card series still remaining. Only one. Sweeps in three of the four, and sadly for Braves fans, that included the Padres taking down the Braves. Braves did make it interesting last night, but the Padres will move on to take on the Dodgers. The other National League wild card series will be determined tonight. The Mets and the Brewers playing at 6 o'clock this evening. So we've got one game on the schedule here in Major League Baseball.
Nothing too shocking in the front. I mean, the Tigers were underdogs, but we were talking about how that's a...
You had two underdogs win.
That's a team, but that's a Detroit team that had been playing so well since the All-Star break. And I mean, the Royals seem to just have Baltimore's number in that one.
A team that lost 106 games,
yeah, remarkable.
A year ago is moving on to the division series.
It is, and it's a Royals team that has been sort of planning their move for a couple of years, thinking they could really, they could challenge this year. They had some, a lot of young players playing the last couple of years, made some free agent moves this past offseason with the hope of breaking into the playoff hunt. And Royals Yankees should be a really interesting series. Dodgers Padres is going to be a lot of fun this weekend, and we'll see what happens. I mean, I think whoever wins tonight will give the Phillies a real challenge. It's just a matter of figuring out who it's going to be between the Brewers and the Mets. The Brewers going with the rookie tonight in an all or nothing game. They got Tobias Myers going out there against the Mets, who are going to they're going to throw Quintana.
Yeah, so you're right. It's the vet against the rook.
Yeah, 31 starts for Quintana this year. He's no stranger to.
He really pitched well down the stretch for the Mets too, and Myers was seemingly out of nowhere. I read a big thing on him today while I was waiting at a couple of places. A big story on him, and he had been pretty highly touted, and then got traded, struggled, was released multiple times, but he's really come on since his third call up this season. He's pitched really well for the Brewers. Good enough that they have confidence to send him out there for game number three tonight.
He wasn't on the – Drew's not here, else we would know. He wasn't on the Cubs World Series team,
no.
Quintana. I think he joined a year later. He was added to, like, the, I think the Cubs traded for him a year after they won the World Series.
He's had some good years for different teams and struggled some early this year, but really pitched well for them down the stretch.
Big spot for him tonight for the Mets as they look to advance to what would be a highly compelling series against Philadelphia.
Oh yeah, of course, Braves fans I'm sure are just pulling against the Mets because they don't want the Mets or the Phillies.
I think it's remarkable. It's remarkable the Braves made it this far, though. I mean,
honestly,
when you lose, you take Strider, Riley, and Acuna away. I mean, I know Riley didn't miss the whole year, but Riley was hurt
out the last 6 weeks.
Yeah, out the last 6 weeks and hurt for a big chunk of the year. I mean, to take those pieces away.
I mean, Ozzie Albies missed more than a month.
Ozzie Albies missed time.
Michael Harris missed more than a month.
Spencer and Acuna are like the Strider and Acuna feel like the huge pieces that you would point out in this situation. Where yeah, I mean it's tough for any team to absorb that. I know the Braves were able to absorb an Acuna injury a couple years ago and win the World Series without him, but that's lightning striking and doesn't always strike twice. I think the Braves will go into next season. I'm curious to see what kind of moves they make, you know, especially if they make it's not really the Braves brand to make a big splashy free agent acquisition from outside the program. There are going to be guys like Adames and Soto, Blake Snell. Like, there's some big names that that maybe the Braves would want to add to a team with a championship window. At the same time, maybe they really like what they're developing inside, and they could probably be, if everybody gets healthy, the Braves would be a pretty good team next year without really having to make any additions.
They would. One of the first things is are they going to be in it to try to retain Max Fried? So.
See, that's the move to me that I'd be more surprised by. I feel like if they're gonna,
I don't think he's back.
Yeah, if they do something for money, I would think that if they do something big ticket, I would think it's addressing the shortstop position because Arcia is, he's been serviceable, but I don't think a team trying to win the World Series should go into, should have Arcia as Plan A. As a shortstop,
He went, he wasn't Plan A for them.
That's what I mean. So maybe the
last
Braves
year or this year.
Maybe the Braves can figure out some way to we'll see if that's a position they address. But yeah, first day of the offseason for the Atlanta Braves. Ferg made a good point about Fried, which was Fried's also a pretty important person in the players' union. And I don't think someone like that's going to give a hometown discount to a team. I think he's going to.
And it's actually not really near his home. He's a Southern California guy.
I could see him going to the Angels. And just, if the Angels want to make a big free agent move to try to stop the bleeding here, maybe they do that. I don't think the Dodgers will be in on Max Fried just because it feels like they've got a bunch of other priorities
they need to look at. Stunned at the Padres or Giants.
Padres or Giants could make some sense. Really either of those teams any of the teams in the NL and AL Wests could make a push. You'd be surprised to see Oakland in the mix for them, but the rest of them would be likely landing spots.
Mm-hmm. All right, so that's probably about it for the baseball talk. We may ask Justin his thoughts on the Braves.
Well, you're gonna go talk a little baseball tomorrow.
Tomorrow, yeah. I mean, Butch Thompson meets with the media tomorrow afternoon. Hopefully, if my car will start, we'll get over there and get that tomorrow. So yeah. But we're wide open here on the Thursday drive. Justin Ferguson, who I just mentioned, normally with us on Thursdays, he's already over in Georgia, and we'll see if we can catch up with him. What did you say, around 5:30?
Yeah, I think 5:30. We got Pascal at 5, so Justin's going to make some time for us around 5:30. We will call him towards the end of the show, previewing Auburn, Georgia, and maybe talking a little Braves as well with Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer.
All right, so in the meantime, we'd love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise, your thoughts on Auburn, Georgia, any of the other ball games this weekend, or anything on your mind. And you can call us on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box. That is presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
So with that, we're underway. Auburn, was a couple of hours or so after we finished the show yesterday, Auburn picked up a commitment from Deuce Knight, flipping him from Notre Dame. And that is one of the spots that was right there, if not at the top, it was right near the top. I think getting a high-profile quarterback for the 2025 class has been a priority for Hugh Freeze and the Auburn staff. And they add Deuce Knight, who he's been visiting Auburn. It feels like, he's been commuting here just about every weekend. He'd been to three or four of the five home games. And the feeling had started to be a week or so ago, well, if he's not going to commit, then Auburn's probably going to move in another direction.
There was buzz over the summer about visits from Deuce Knight. I think that was around the same time that a key part of Notre Dame's class flipped to Michigan, and you had people in Notre Dame worried about the status of some of the top commitments for the class of 2025. And Deuce Knight, confirming those suspicions with people by making the flip from Notre Dame to Auburn. This is Auburn. Auburn, I believe, moves up to three in the ESPN.com.
Yeah, they're four. I believe they're four in the consensus. So they're, but they are solidly a top five class.
Deuce is the seventh top 100 player on ESPN.com's rankings to commit to Auburn since June 1st in the class of 20.
And a lot of those guys. And,
class 25.
Once again, flipping has been something that is that Hugh Freeze and his staff have been very good at over the last couple of years. Deuce is the number two dual threat, according to Rivals and 24/7, the number two dual threat quarterback in the country, and a top 50 player in the country, I believe, according to Rivals. Now, here's the thing. He is not a finished product. I think everyone, all the projections on Deuce Knight are that he'll need to come in and refine his talent. He needs to work on his accuracy. He is a ridiculous athlete. I believe he was the state long jump and high jump champion in track and ran on their 4x100 relay team. He's a ridiculous athlete.
Are there people talking about Deuce Knight like he's step in and start immediately?
Yeah, some people. Yes. I mean, a lot of people will be – I think there will be people that are disappointed that he doesn't just step in and play. He's not projected as a year one or his first – when he steps on campus.
How many quarterbacks in any class are projected as year one start?
How many calls do we get about, well, everybody else is playing freshman?
Well, I don't know if everybody else is playing true freshman starting quarterbacks.
No, they're not.
It was pretty significant when Bo Nix did it in 2019,
yes,
because it was the first time Auburn had done it in decades, and it's rare for a starting quarterback to win a job in the SEC as a true freshman. It's just something that does. If you're the best guy as a true freshman, but some of the best quarterbacks that the SEC has ever seen didn't show up and win the job as true freshmen. Most of the best quarterbacks the SEC has ever seen aren't guys who showed up and won the job as true freshmen. You know, I think it's a huge addition to a quarterback room, especially because Hugh Freeze does not want to constantly go outside the program and bring in a transfer every year as his starter. To have somebody that he can develop and challenge for a starting job, probably in 26, mm-hmm, I would say, is the more serious challenge to the starting job for Deuce. But think about Nico at Tennessee, right? Like that,
yes.
That's a guy who showed
up. He's a second-year guy.
Second-year guy who was a top-five dual-threat quarterback. I think he was the number two dual-threat quarterback coming out of the country, coming out of high school. He spends a year redshirting and learning Tennessee's system, and he's a highly effective quarterback as a redshirt freshman. I think that is probably the plan for Deuce Knight if Auburn can – if things go well. The thought of having a – Whether it's one of the guys in the room right now or somebody you bring in outside the program as a veteran transfer to be your starter in 25 while you redshirt Deuce, and then letting Deuce Knight maybe get a taste of action in 25 but really challenge to be Auburn's QB1 in 26 and be that QB for however long that he can hold on to the job. I think that would be an excellent sort of bridge. Like that's a plan, mm-hmm, at the quarterback position, and a lot of teams don't get to have a plan at the quarterback position. It's who you have right now, and then in December they're going to try to figure out an answer from what's available. I think Hugh Freeze doesn't want that to be the plan every year. Is let's go shopping in December for a new quarterback,
no.
And signing someone like Deuce lets him have options in the future. Even as he seeks veteran help immediately.
It's really interesting. And by the way, some of the measurables for Deuce, he's 6'5", around 205, and as I said, a ridiculous athlete. Oh, by the way, he's left-handed. It will be, be interesting to follow him. He's having a very good year this year back in the state of Mississippi. Again,
team is struggling, right? I know that. I think
they haven't been great.
Yeah.
Where is he from? Loosedale?
Loosedale, Mississippi.
Right.
Yeah. George.
And he transferred. Did you? It's really interesting. He transferred to Lipscomb Academy last year, so he was the quarterback who followed Hank Brown at Lipscomb Academy after after he graduated, and of course his coach moved on to UAB, but after a few games at Lipscomb Academy, he transferred back to Lousdale. The head coach, the coach who came in and replaced
Dilfer?
I'm blanking on Trent's name.
Trent Dilfer, yeah.
The coach who came in and replaced Trent Dilfer was let go mid-season, and at that point, I believe Deuce transferred back to Lousdale. Last year only completed 50% of his passes.
George County, I believe, is the high school he plays for in Lousdale,
He had a really good sophomore year where he completed about 62% of his passes, completed 50% as a junior. This year he's completing 65% and is a tremendous runner as well. But that's what all the folks that have seen him say, that, you know, he had a really good good showing at the Elite 11. He tests off the charts. He's a guy that when you see him and he tests, it's like, wow, because he's big, he's fast, he's strong, but he's still learning. And I saw one scouting report said the ceiling that the Auburn quarterback room should have next year with Walker White and Deuce Knight said is unbelievable. He said they are very similar in both needed to come in and try to knock off the edges, be more refined as quarterbacks, that Walker White has the arm strength and everything, just needs to understand the intricacies more of running 11-on-11 football, and Deuce Knight needs to refine as a passer. So he said, but two potential sky-high ceiling type quarterbacks, but they aren't there yet. So that's the thing to keep in mind for the people that are like, we got to have him now. And that's I thought it was interesting that Walker White got mentioned in the Deuce Knight article. And that may be an answer for some folks that now are saying, look, season's done, let's cash it in, let's play Walker White and get ready for the future. Walker White needs to be ready when he's inserted, you know, when he's thrown out into SEC play.
I thought Jason made a really good point about that yesterday, which is it is very easy to sit outside the program and say punt on this year, and even if the quarterback, even if a younger quarterback doesn't give you as good a chance to win as the upperclassman does right now, play him anyway to gain experience. I don't think Hugh Freeze believes that all is lost this year, and that he can't gain something by playing better football week to week, even if it's with some upperclassmen and some seniors at key spots. Now, if Peyton's performance takes a turn to where it becomes tougher to say he gives you the best chance to win compared to the other guys, I think that changes things. But right now, no, it's I understand. Fans who want to believe that there's a quarterback on the team other than Peyton Thorne that gives him a better chance to win right now, or even, because I think we've heard from fans, it doesn't matter if the younger quarterback doesn't give you a better chance to win than Peyton Thorne right now.
That's crazy, Dan.
But we've heard.
I've heard that, but that just sounds crazy to me. That it's like, I don't care if we lose, I just want to see somebody else.
And I think that
would be crazy.
Well, I think some of the feeling there is a belief that it's that Auburn,
anybody's better?
Well, no, that Auburn will lose no matter what.
Oh.
Like I think that's where some of that is coming from, is that,
well, we've heard that multiple times. We've heard anybody but Gus, we heard anybody but Bo. You know, it's like, is it getting to some folks feeling anybody but Peyton.
I absolutely think there's some of that in the fan base, which, you know, to me, while I understand, I think especially after this past game, I think that lets Hugh Freeze off the hook. Doesn't it? I mean, I think focusing your anger on Peyton Thorne after this past game, I think lets Hugh Freeze's decision making off the hook.
All right, we will get to our first break. Love your thoughts on Deuce Knight, the games coming up this weekend. Anything on your mind, sports wise? As we're just underway here on the Thursday Drive.
The results are in, and Game Day Men's Health in Auburn has delivered. The certified medical.
Turn up some more yardage on the drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. And again, we'll check in with Justin Ferguson in hour number two. So right now the lines are wide open. You heard the number, 334-321-1390. And let's get to the Drive hotline. And Ty the Tiger is up first. What's up, Ty?
What's going on, guys?
Good to hear from you, bud.
Man, good to hear from y'all, too. Well, yeah, sports has not been good to me. Last couple years, I'm a Auburn, Braves, and Cowboys fan.
You got a title. Tough, you got a Braves title. Hold on, you got a championship.
I got a Braves title. I do.
There are a lot of fans that their top two or three teams have not won a championship in the last four or five years.
Or more.
It's been there. I get that when, especially if Auburn football is, you know, your primary. You know, like I get that's been, you know, that's been a kick in the chops or two, but
like I say, at least the Braves and Cowboys make the playoffs each year. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got nothing. I got nothing for you on the Cowboys thing. I just feel like that's that one's only gonna get tougher. And I feel like Washington maybe found their guy, which is gonna make it tougher too.
Yeah, you ain't lying. The kid's good. I will say with the Braves, though, I mean, guys, I can't remember all the whole list, but I saw it on Facebook today. It was just showing how many games our key players missed this past year with Strider and Acuna and Riley and Albies. I mean, just all these guys. I mean, I'll be honest with you, you almost kind of give it to Snit. I mean, to just even make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was really a good job. I mean, you know, we're just so used to being division champs, and I mean, this year we shouldn't have really even been in it. Any other team would have folded up, man. I mean, I'm really proud of our guys this year. You know, for anybody to say, oh, Braves choked again, this was not a choke job. This was a, we lived in with UCLA and that white kid. I mean,
you take a piece like Strider and a piece like Acuna away from pretty much any other team in the National League, they're not in contention at the end of the year.
Yeah,
like that's. I mean, to me, it's remarkable. And you know, I'd say maybe it's a little bit of a bummer that a season like the one Chris Sale has ends this prematurely. Although you didn't know if he was going to pitch again in the postseason anyway. Mm-hmm. Let's keep that in mind too, is that the Braves had to do it in the best of three without the Cy Young Award winner, who,
right,
you know, the guy who's going to win the NL. Like,
we limp into the playoffs, and our number one guy we hold out to start game one doesn't even pitch, and he's the Cy Young winner. I mean, triple crown Cy Young winner. So, I mean, I'm proud of the Braves. We'll be back at the top next year, and I think we'll have some extra motivation, and we'll be all right. I'm rooting for the Padres. I don't know about you guys, but I hate.
Well,
the
Dan
Dodgers.
Dan's a Dodger fan, so.
I mean, I would point out. I mean, the Brewers are still sitting there with no titles ever. Like, I mean, that is, and people forget. Like before the last decade, very few postseason appearances in the history of the Milwaukee Brewers organization. I think more than half of their postseason appearances in history have come in the last 8-10 seasons. And so it would be really cool for those. I mean, you talk about starved, right? Like there's some 40-50 year old Milwaukee Brewers fans that have never seen them win jack.
Yeah, you feel for Uke.
Well, yeah. Hey, one last thing I want to say is I'm going with the pattern. Okay. Going with the pattern on this, my pick for the World Series champions as of today is going to be the Kansas City Royals. Does anybody know why?
No, I don't. But if they go from 106 losses to World Series champs, what an unbelievable turnaround.
Dang it. And it's the guy, he pitched for us. He won it with us in 21.
Will Smith.
Yeah. That's right.
The big lefty.
Not
the Dodgers catcher, the big lefty. Yeah.
Not the rapper, not the Dodgers catcher.
Guess who he's pitching for this year?
That is right. He is with the Royals. Would this be four straight?
You talk about
with
a fan.
Four different teams.
He was with the Texas Rangers last year, and he won with us. Man, that would be crazy.
And, another championship in Kansas City after a pair of Super Bowl titles too.
Well, look, guys. Last thing I want to say is, man, look, if we're not going to win on the football field, we got to at least win the offseason. And I think Hugh is at least doing that. He is building something special. We as fans, guys, we've got to calm down. We've got to sit back. We've got to let a coach develop. We've got to let players. I don't think the fans understand how depleted we were after the potato farmer left. And I just think that we've really got to, I mean, you know, again, guys, this is the fan base. Y'all said it earlier. This is a fan base that ran Bo Nix out of town, a Heisman Trophy finalist, because we just want to blame somebody.
But I do want to say, Ty the Tiger, I do want to say, like, I understand. I mean, we've been talking about the realities of the Auburn roster, the whole time. At the same time, I don't know if it was talent deficiencies that play the primary culprit in any of those three losses. Right? I feel like Auburn has the talent. Auburn had the talent to be 5-0 with this schedule. And questionable decision making and miscues, errors both forced and unforced, feel like they're playing a larger role. I mean they're two of Auburn's losses are the teams they beat last year with their depleted roster. So I get it, and I think that Hugh Freeze absolutely building up both things are true. That the roster is probably not where it needs to be to consistently challenge the best teams in the SEC, but Auburn had the players to win more than two of their first five games this year.
You're right, man, but again, you can have the Jimmys and Joes and the X's and O's, but, I mean, it doesn't matter, man. If you're turning the ball over five times a game, I understand that Oklahoma we didn't, but they were depleted. They're not the Oklahoma. I mean, they were on their sixth string wide receiver.
Right.
You know, we should have been way out in front of that game, and we don't have the most important. I mean, again, I don't sit here and blame Peyton. Peyton is out there doing everything he possibly can, and he's trying his hardest. I didn't make it as far as Peyton Thorne did. I'm not fixing to sit here and deem the kid, not a winner, man. He's a D1 quarterback. He's a winner whether he wins the game or not, dude. He's a good kid. He says the right things. He takes accountability when I hear him talk. But, I mean, at the same time, the facts are the facts. You're turning the ball over like that, it is what it is. And it ain't all on him, I mean, his interceptions hurt terrible. But the two running backs walking into the end zones and fumbling hurts almost as worse or even worse, So you got to hold on to the ball. And I don't blame the kids. Look, I've never played D1 football, so I don't know how hard it is. I can only imagine. But I just think, again, we're going to get that. We're going to get the quarterback right. We're going to get the DBs right. I mean, I think those are our two biggest downfalls this year. And I think we got a lot of young talent that would be good. Last thing I want to say is, y'all, I'm with the train of, okay, you want to go seven, and this is before Oklahoma and Arkansas, but I was in the mindset of, okay, do you want to go 7-5 with Peyton Thorne, or do you want to go 5-7 with see what Walker White's about or Hank Brown and see if they can lead this team? Because, I mean, again, we know Peyton Thorne is gone after this year, and this year's kind of going to be a wash, I mean, the way we're looking at it. At this point, I put Walker White in to see what he's about. Maybe not versus Georgia. That's kind of putting the kid on a death sentence. But, I mean, at the same time, I understand Freeze, too. He wants to win now and win as many games as possible. That's what he's paid for. So I'm going to hang up and listen, guys. I love y'all as always, man. War damn Eagles.
Appreciate it, Ty. Yeah, I mean, and that's sort of the situation. It's like you feel like you don't have a chance if you do that, and you might absolutely destroy the confidence of a young player, and if you crush him, he may not be able to build back up.
I imagine Hugh Freeze would reject the premise of we don't have a chance with Peyton Thorne, so play somebody else.
Right.
I think that's where he would object to, well, in fact, look at how the offense just played against Oklahoma, one of the
better defenses in the Southeast.
One of the four or five best defenses in the conference. Look at how they just played against Oklahoma. This offense does have a chance with Peyton Thorne. and probably a much better chance with Peyton Thorne than they do right now with any of the other quarterbacks.
I don't think there's any question about that. That's exactly what all the coaches are feeling, and that's unless something happens to Peyton, either physically or it's he just cannot get the offense to do anything at all. I'd be surprised. It's going to be Peyton. All right, let's get to our bottom of the hour break. Love to hear from you, though. 334-321-1390. Bill and Dan here on the Thursday Drive. Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Love for you to join in. Anything on your mind, sports-wise, 334-321-1390. Auburn, Georgia, the resumption of the South's oldest series over in Athens, where it has been very difficult for Auburn. The Tigers haven't won there since 2005. Georgia has won, is it 18 of the last 21 now? I believe it's something like that. Georgia's had a big advantage. The series that for 100 years, it was dead even. I mean, it was and forth.
Auburn's last win in the series was 17. Mm-hmm. Before that, Auburn won in 13 on the prayer. Auburn won in 10 on the Cam Newton, the Nick Fairley kerfluffle at the end of that game. Auburn won in 05 on the pass, the Brandon Cox pass. Auburn won a pretty one-sided game in 04.
Oh, yeah. I mean, up until then, that's when the series, Auburn, as a matter of fact, had a slight lead after the 05 game. But yes, Georgia has only allowed Auburn to win three times since 2005. And remember, they played twice in 17, playing in the SEC title game as well.
Yeah, so this would be – so 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. This would be eight straight in the series for Georgia. Since
they won seven straight. Yeah.
Yeah.
This would be number eight. And they're 23-24 point favorites. 334-321-1390. Who have we got up next?
We've got Jason on the line.
Hey, Jason.
Hey, man. How's it going?
Pretty good.
Good. Hey, want to talk a little football. Several things on my mind, but first and foremost, when it comes to Peyton Thorne, I was listening to a podcast today, and do you know who's fourth in the SEC in passing yards per game?
I would think it's probably it's Auburn or it's Peyton Thorne.
Peyton Thorne.
I mean, it's remarkable. I mean, doing a podcast with the guys from Georgia from Dogs 247 last night with Justin Ferguson. I mean, Peyton Thorne is, and yes, some of this is skewed by Alabama A&M, but Peyton Thorne is eighth nationally in yards per attempt among college football quarterbacks.
And he hasn't thrown the ball as much as some other guys either.
I mean, the problem last year when Auburn
and some Auburn people will go good, but
like the problem last year when Auburn was struggling to get to 100 yards in different games.
Yeah.
Like it's a different problem for the offense now than it was last year. And yeah, I think that some of the wins and losses and some of the worst moments for the Auburn offense might lead people to think that the numbers aren't what they are.
Yeah, and he also had two picks that went off Cam Coleman's hand.
Right.
So you take him. He has 10 touchdowns. If you take two picks off of him, then you're 10-4, which all of a sudden looks a whole lot better. So I listened to your last caller, and I've heard several people like we just should play Hank the rest of the year. You know, Walker the rest of the year. You know, a lot of this is not on Peyton, and I think it's going to progress as the year goes on. KLS is new to this offense. Obviously, almost every receiver we're throwing to is new. There are a lot of these things that I think are just going to get better, and I think we saw that Saturday. That's by far the best we've looked. Let me ask you this. Even though we're 2-3, would you guys say we're a better football team right now than we were at any point last year?
Yes, I would.
I think there was not a game last year where I think Auburn looked as complete on both sides of the ball as against a good opponent, as they did against Oklahoma on Saturday.
Absolutely. But you know, we played competitively with Georgia and Alabama last year, but we had no offense at all in those two games. And there must have been three or four times last year where he struggled to have 100 yards passing in the
mm-hmm.
game.
Multiple games.
So, I mean, there is progress being made. And you know, all the freshmen that contributed Saturday was huge. And what I think you'll see is – probably no more than that this Saturday, maybe even a little less like with Riddick. But when we get that off week and we get 2 weeks to get ready, I think you'll start seeing a few more chip in, and you're going to see DeMarcus Riddick on the field more. And those guys are going to make a bigger impact the second half of this season.
No, good stuff, Jason. Like I think that's a because a lot of the I think the more vocal side of it is the side that is frustrated with Auburn's quarterback situation. And to hear I think that you make some really good points about what Peyton is doing well.
Yeah, so I would agree that we have more talent than the teams we've lost to. Should not have lost the games, as the previous caller said. You know, 5 turnovers in each of the games are why we lost, but. You know, the reason we're even more talented than they are is because of what Hugh has brought in such a short period of time with all the flips he had in his first class and the bringing a KLS in that is the best receiver we've had in years. You know, we would not be better than them if we had another coach that wasn't able to bring in that kind of talent. So, you know, what we're doing now with, you know, Deuce Knight, it's just going to solidify this class. You're going to have less people jump off.
I would argue that it's important. Like that. I would argue that even if you're doing it with a quarterback who's not going to be on next year's team, it's important for the offense to look good, too. Like I think if Auburn, the thought that if Auburn's offense, and again I don't, there's the chance that Hank improves too. But if Auburn's offense played like it did in the first half against Arkansas for the rest of the season, I think that would have a, even though you're playing a young quarterback who has eligibility remaining, I think that could do real damage to your recruiting class. I think and
it could. I mean, the thing is, if you have guys though, if you have receivers that are running open and it looks like there are lanes for the running backs to go, then you might not pile up yards if the guys don't do that. But I don't see anything that's really going to be damaging when they look at what Auburn's doing, where you know prospects wouldn't say, oh yeah, I can do that, and maybe I can do that better.
Oh, I'm saying if you punt on this to simply play a young quarterback for the sake of playing a young quarterback, and the offense takes
and
the offense takes a downturn, that could do damage. And so, and I think it's important too that is. I mean, you're seeing the success on the recruiting trail this season. Auburn is playing young guys. Like on both sides of the ball, I think it's playing well, even with a 2-3 record. The fact that Auburn has been able to get as many first and second year defensive players on the field as they have, and they've been able to get Cam Coleman and Perry Thompson and Malcolm Simmons on the field. I would think that Perry and Malcolm are only going to play more moving forward. Like I think it's shown recruits this is a place where you can get on the field and make an impact if you're ready immediately. It's just I don't know if Auburn necessarily has a first or second year quarterback on the team who can outperform everybody else on the roster.
Yeah, I agree. Final thought, when Hugh fussed at Peyton after throwing those two incompletions, and, you know, in the old days, well, prior to this year, you could blame the quarterback for that. But doesn't he have the ability to speak into Peyton Thorne's helmet the first 15 seconds of the play clock?
Yes.
And so that's he should be telling him, don't check out of a run. I know it looks like, you know, they've got the line of scrimmage clogged up, but don't check out.
He has the final say until 15 seconds are to go, and you're absolutely right. That's something we talked about that a lot on Monday.
Yeah, and as we've seen on the replays, Cam Coleman was wide open on the first play. He just threw it to the wrong person. I'm not saying that we should have run. I know everybody else is because everybody else loves hindsight. But if they stack the box and Hunter runs for no gains or -1, then everybody's going to say, why are we playing conservative? Why don't we keep doing what we've been doing the whole game?
Yeah, it's funny. So, I mean, I hear a lot of Alabama fans complaining that, hey, why didn't Kalen DeBoer go ahead and, you know, put his foot down and go for it and kill Georgia? Whereas Auburn fans are like, why didn't Auburn go conservative and run the ball? So, I mean, it all depends on the results. If it works, then it's going to be a great decision by the coach. I mean, sure, in hindsight, I mean, one of the things we were talking about Monday, you hand it off and get nothing on all three of those plays there after Jarquez has run. You've at least run another 2 minutes off the clock. But what Hugh Freeze was trying to do, he thought he had a shot of another big play to go ahead and just completely put the ball game away, make it an 18-point game.
Yeah, I agree. And I, like I said, he just made the wrong read on that play. And I think Cam would have got 8 or 10 yards. We got it in the first down. We'd have kept moving, gotten further in field goal range. So, you know, just some of that, like you said, that's a great phrasing. Results are why people are fussing about it, not necessarily the play. Yep.
Great all stuff, guys. Jason. Good hearing from you.
Yeah, great stuff, Jason. Yep. Really appreciate it.
334-321-1390. That is the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. We'll get to our final break of hour number one. Don't forget, David Pascal from Chattanooga joins us at 5. Then at 5:30, we're going to check in with Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. So we'd love to hear from you here on the Thursday Drive.
Don't buy the lie. This is Lee County District Attorney Jess.
Here on this Thursday afternoon, Bill and Dan. And, we'd love to hear from you. We've been discussing different thoughts on the quarterback situation. Obviously, we've been talking about it all season long. Adding a little more to it with Auburn adding the flip of Deuce Knight from Notre Dame overnight.
What are you expecting Saturday? You know, we were talking. I was on the Doug show. Had to make my pick. Number.
I expect Georgia to be extremely motivated. I was sort of hoping that if Georgia had won, that if Auburn had held on against Oklahoma, so neither thing happened. If Auburn holds on against Oklahoma and Georgia won, that Georgia might be basking in the glow of beating Alabama for just the second time in Kirby's 8 meetings against them. But all that stuff didn't go. So I think Georgia, maybe homecoming can be a bit of a distraction. Maybe the fact that they've dominated Auburn might be a little bit. It's hard for me to just count on Georgia looking past Auburn. I don't think Kirby's going to let them do that. I don't think it is a terrible matchup for Auburn. Georgia's just more talented.
Yeah, I don't think Georgia was looking past Kentucky, and they struggled. They struggled to get things going offensively.
I don't know. I think Georgia may have been looking past Kentucky.
I mean, I just wonder if. I mean, it's so easy to sort of like dismiss performances like that, I wonder. Georgia's struggled to get the run game going. Now, when Carson Beck is playing well, that's not too big of an issue for the Georgia offense, like it was against Alabama on Saturday. But I don't know. I'm curious as to how quickly Georgia's offense can get in gear and sort of put the pressure on Auburn. I think this could be a game. I wouldn't be surprised at all if this is a competitive fourth quarter.
I wouldn't either. I would not.
Would not be surprised at all if this game's close.
It's crazy. Georgia is near the bottom of the SEC in rushing. They have not run it very well, and as a result, they haven't even tried to run it that much in some games because they have just struggled. If the Auburn defensive front can hold up against the run, and then they're going to have to find a pass rush somewhere to get after Carson Beck. Carson, that was one of his worst games this past week. First half was by far the worst half of football I think Carson Beck has played since he's been at Georgia.
Yeah, you tell me Georgia's got 14 or 17 at the end of the first quarter, and I think Auburn's in a whole bunch of trouble. But if this game's low scoring, I think it feels like a game where – and I did pick Georgia against the number just because Auburn has not covered in the previous
games. No, they haven't.
I'm not going to bet against that streak.
Absolutely wouldn't pick Georgia, wouldn't pick Auburn straight up, but I might take them in the points.
A lot of points. I just went ahead and thought Auburn didn't cover the first three Power Conference ones, so I'm going to.
But they're on the road, and I'm waiting. All right, we saw some near misses a year ago. Not that I'm pulling for a near miss, and that's going to be a big moral victory, but I wouldn't be shocked if Auburn's got some things for Georgia.
Sure, and if this game, I could see it being a competitive two quarters and maybe two and a half quarters. This feels like a game more that none of Auburn's first five opponents were really in position to exploit a lack of depth at any spot on the Auburn roster.
Georgia is a team with Carson Beck and Georgia's receivers.
But I also think Georgia, as the game goes on, can substitute more and feel good about what they're bringing off the bench everywhere. And it would make sense, more than Arkansas or Oklahoma, it would make sense for Georgia to be the fresher, better team.
Georgia is the more talented team.
In the third and fourth quarter.
Nobody's going to argue that.
I think the blueprint for an Auburn upset is they probably need to be several points better.
They need to jump on them. Yeah. They need to really get off to a quick start.
Yeah, the way Auburn's near upsets played out last season at home, where if Auburn can build a 10-point lead in the third quarter and hold on and maybe add some points to it, they've got a shot. But Auburn's – I don't think this is an Auburn team that's going to come back from down 14 or 21 in the second half against Georgia in Athens. Like Auburn needs to be in top position as Georgia starts their rally if they're going to pull off this upset. If Georgia's in that kind of position, then that's how Georgia covers that 23.5.
Oh yeah.
If, and that's sort of my like if while I absolutely think there's a version of this where it's very close in the fourth quarter, I also think there's a version of this where it's very close for 2.5 quarters, and then Georgia pulls away and maybe even covers.
Seen those quite a few times.
21 or 28.
Yeah, we've seen that. So, it'll be interesting. We're running short on time here in hour number one, 334-321-1390. We got about a minute maybe or less. So, okay, we had a call coming in. So, yeah, we're under a minute.
Want to remind people, Yellowhammer will call back, but want to remind people we got Pascal starting hour number two, and after tonight's show, we've got Tiger Talk on ESPN 106.7,
the Tiger Talk replay of Monday night's Tiger Talk. So, yeah, if you missed it Monday, you can check it out tonight right here on ESPN 106.7. We'll get to our top of the hour break. David Pascal joins us when we come back for hour number two of the Thursday Drive.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Hour number two just getting underway, and the second hour of the show brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And we will be checking in just a couple of minutes with our good friend David Pascal from Chattanooga. But in the meantime, Yellowhammer is on the phone. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, afternoon. So, anyway, on offense, we've got the run-pass ratio. But on defense, there's this other ratio. It's kind of an inverse ratio. It's you want to put your emphasis on coverage, or do you want to put it on pass rush? And so last year against Alabama, we went to the far extreme of having two people on the rush. And then you could go the other way, where everybody's up on run support, and the poor old defensive backs are flooded and can't deal with it. And so there's that kind of thing going on. And I just think, this is not a great opinion on my part, but it's just an impression, that we maybe here in Auburn defensively have not put enough rush, too much coverage.
That's interesting, Yellowhammer, and appreciate the call. We will I don't know that that's the situation. I think at times you don't have what you hope you have is enough talent to be able to get pressure with your front defensive linemen.
That's been a point of emphasis.
And that's something that Auburn has not had that kind of push from the defensive line consistently over the years. You have to add other people to get pressure.
Right. I mean, it gets back to sort of like fundamentals about, how many can you commit in the secondary versus how many do you send on the blitz. How many you send on the blitz often depends on how much pressure you're getting without blitzing, how much pressure you're going to get when you bring three or you bring four. And that's something where, Keldrick Faulks had his moments. Jalen McLeod has probably played better in every game this year than he played in the previous game. Auburn's still looking for consistent pass rushers that they can utilize so that they're not as concerned. So they don't have to overcommit to they don't want to have to overcommit blitzers and leave their leave their options.
You got too many guys open on islands.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
All right, 334-321-1390. That's our Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. We're gonna get to the hotline though, and welcome in our regular guest here to start hour number two of the Drive. And that's our good friend from the Chattanooga Times Free Press and WGOW there in Chattanooga, where he just wrapped up his show. And that is David Pascal. Hey, David, how you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. I hope you guys are too.
Doing pretty well. It's been a tough week. This one hurt even more, and it's not like it had been painless, the losses to Cal and Arkansas, but the Oklahoma game was one where Hugh Freeze didn't disagree with everybody else that said Auburn should have won that ball game.
Yeah, and having gone to Auburn, it's interesting. You think about the number of painful losses that Auburn has experienced in Jordan-Hare. I go back to even in 02 and 03, you kind of had those back-to-back years where you had the Georgia 4th and 15 that beat Auburn. Then the next year you had Eli Manning, you know, beat Auburn, which had that unfortunate drop by Obamanu. I mean, there were definitely some gut punches, but boy, now you're obviously seeing them a lot more frequently. I mean, just Auburn did so many things right in that game to get up 21-10 and then to just come away. I get it. That has to feel just like an absolute gut punch.
Yeah, now and now you have to somehow get up and go play a Georgia team that, wow, that was one of the wildest games that we've seen in a while, that Alabama-Georgia game where, Alabama's up 28-0 early in the second quarter and look like they're on their way to, you know, one of the biggest routes we've ever seen. And then here comes Georgia all the way back to take the lead. I mean, what a crazy game. But Georgia now knows, all right, they lost that one. That's not really going to hurt them as far as their playoff hopes. But they can't have another bump, especially to a team that they're heavily favored.
Well, I mean, how glad are they to have come back against Kentucky, right? Because what would the playoff picture look like right now for Georgia if they let the Kentucky game slip? I think it's probably a similar deal if they let the game on Saturday slip through their fingers.
Yeah, I think because we've talked about how Georgia's schedule is significantly harder than it typically is. I think Georgia is at the top of the college football list as far as teams that could get in the playoffs with a 9-3 record. Because if Georgia's 9-3, and you know, and you've got losses to, you know, at Alabama, at Texas, and then like pick another one, whether it's home against Tennessee or at Ole Miss, that still means that other one would be a win. You'd have a 31-point win over Clemson. I just think your resume would be, you know, good enough to where you'd be in that conversation. Obviously, Kirby doesn't want to test that theory.
No.
But I do think Georgia's at the top of the list of teams that could get to the playoffs with a 9-3 record. I mean, you mentioned it, Bill, the 28-0 start. I didn't know anybody could do that to Georgia, even Alabama in Bryant-Denny. But, I mean, that has been an issue the last year and a half with Georgia, the slow start. So, I mean, I think Auburn's kind of got to look into that. I think if Georgia starts slow and if Auburn doesn't turn the ball over, this is a game that Auburn could stay around in a lot longer than maybe most people think.
I'm curious to see how the Georgia run games looks because, I mean, obviously when you're down 28-0 to Alabama, you maybe alter.
You're going to forego.
You alter the game plan a little
right.
bit. But ETN struggled to get going in some of Georgia's other games too. And I mean, I think that's Georgia's been able to run the ball so successfully in the Kirby Smart era that it's a little bit surprising that they've struggled to get that aspect in gear so far.
Yeah, and you hadn't had Ratledge up front, and he's obviously a huge piece to what they do running the ball. So, but you're right. I mean, it has not been the typical Georgia that we're used to just dominating with the run. So, yeah, I am curious. I would be very disappointed if Auburn, you know, what was it 2 years ago, 42-10? I would be very disappointed in Auburn if that was a 42-10 type of game. I think it'll be closer to, like, you know, something along the lines of maybe 31-13, but stays competitive, you know, for a good chunk of it.
Yeah, I mean, recently it has been rough for Auburn over there, and that's something you pointed it out. We've been saying that all week. I mean, Auburn's got to get off to a quick start. Georgia has been prone to allowing teams getting off to quick starts, but for Auburn to even stay in the ball game, they're really going to have to.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. This cannot get away from Auburn early. I mean, you think about all those years under Malzahn, there were so many times that Auburn would lead Georgia 7-0, and that would be the only touchdown
right.
they scored the entire game.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that, you know, you have one team that starts slow, and you've got another team that's dealing with a minus 11 turnover margin. So if the turnovers keep coming from Auburn and they just really prove to be snake bit, then that one gets ugly in a hurry, I think.
Other games in the conference this week, it is striking that I think Bama and Georgia are favored by just about the same number.
Mm-hmm.
It's just Bama's playing Vanderbilt in Nashville, and Georgia is hosting Auburn. Do you see a path where Vanderbilt keeps this game kind of interesting?
You know, maybe for a little bit. I mean, it may be one of those that, you know, could be 17-7 at half and 34-13 or 38-13 when it's all said and done. But, you know, I don't think Vandy's – I do think Clark Lee's doing a good job of, like, you know, when somebody starts to ask a question about that has kind of that moral victory tone to it, he kind of cuts it off. He's like, uh-uh, we're not about that. And so, the fact that Vanderbilt almost won at Missouri, and I know beating Missouri and beating Alabama are definitely viewed as two different things. But no, I think there should be some confidence there where they can keep it kind of competitive. And you have to wonder about the letdown potential. Not that it would cost Alabama a victory by any stretch, but you do kind of wonder if this could be like another USF game where they do kind of let the opponent, an inferior opponent, kind of hang around.
Yeah, because that was last week. I mean, an unbelievable finish after, you know, after seeing Georgia come all the way back and then to be able to pull that one out. It's going to be very tough to not expect them to be a little bit flat when they come out this week.
I totally agree. That was such an incredible looking atmosphere and such an incredible everything. I mean, it was just, who would have ever, you know, the thing that was so wild about that game is had Georgia won 34-33, you would have had three straight games on ABC where the home crowd was just devastated. I mean, you would have gone straight from Oxford to Auburn to Tuscaloosa, and, mm-hmm. and maybe that's happened before, but I just can't remember a situation where you would have just three consecutive home crowd gut punches. Obviously, yeah. Bama pulled it out to prevent that, but wow, what a day
it wasn't like Carson and Georgia didn't have a shot when it was 41-34.
It would have been the Super Bowl for the guys working in the production booths who are looking for like fan – Like shocked fan responses, right? Like just a gold,
yeah. You're right.
Just
about
a gold mine. Go a gold mine for that guy. You know what? A team that I'm interested in, David. So Notre Dame and A&M were tied with like 2 minutes left in that game, and Notre Dame ends up winning by 10. You know, they get the touchdown, turnover on downs, kick a field goal, you know, protect the lead, and A&M hasn't lost since.
No, they haven't, and now they're favored over that Missouri team you were just talking about.
A&M's ranked 25. If they hold on and beat Notre Dame, a game they led with two, it was tied with 2 minutes left. If they're 5-0 with a win in that game, what are they ranked right now?
They may be higher than Missouri.
I mean, they could be flirting with the top five.
Yeah.
They've got a there's one non-conference game that they had that they won like 26-20 or something. I'm trying to think of the team. It was not impressive. So they haven't always. You know, and then the Arkansas game being you talk about Groundhog Day. Texas A&M, Arkansas, it's like 12-1 now, Aggies, mm-hmm. since they came in the league, and like nine of the 12 have been like single, you know, one possession games.
Yeah.
Three of them
mm-hmm.
have gone into overtime. It's like the same game every year. But yeah, to your point, I mean the Missouri Texas A&M game. I mean, here we are in October. And we really know nothing about either one of these two teams. We have no idea how good they are. I mean, these two teams seem like, I mean, for all we know, Missouri's like a peripheral top 25 team where Texas A&M's ranked. So, I mean, this game will thankfully shed a lot more on what these teams are like, because right now I don't have a clue.
Missouri's last two is the 6-point come from behind over Boston College.
And a should have lost to Vandy.
And the double overtime win over Vandy. It's like, mm-hmm. it's the craziest resume for a top 10 team. And look, and maybe they go justify it with a one-sided beatdown of A&M and Kyle Field. But right now it is a lot of we're counting on stuff we heard before the season to justify Missouri's ranking.
Exactly. Hey, and Dan, to that point, I'm one of the AP poll voters this year, and I mean, I'm sorry, if you look at Ole Miss's resume, I mean, they've beaten – their four wins are absolutely teams like below the top 60 or 75 in the country. I mean, these teams are – you know, you're talking about like Furman, Middle Tennessee, a bad Wake Forest that just lost to Louisiana, Georgia Southern, and you've lost at home now to an unranked team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that resume, you know, is nothing. And Ole Miss only dropped to 12. I cannot understand for the life of me – how Ole Miss is still 12th in the country. Now, they may have the team that's worthy of being 12th down the road, but their resumes borderline should they even be ranked.
Yeah, there are three or four one-loss teams that are ranked behind Ole Miss in the most recent poll. LSU, Notre Dame, I would say Utah and Oklahoma come to mind as teams that I'd probably rank ahead of Ole Miss based on what they've done this year.
Ole Miss is there because of Lane. I mean, because he's fun to listen to watch, and his team's fun to watch. But yes, they haven't proven anything against a team with a heartbeat yet, and they're in Columbia this weekend against South Carolina. I have no idea.
I might rank Indiana ahead of Ole Miss with two wins over. I mean, great, UCLA and Maryland aren't world beaters, but they're 5-0.
Hey, Bill, I will say this about you talking about Kiffin. It's interesting because people find him funny and entertaining and stuff like that. But when he loses, when they lost the other day, boy, the piling on social media was pretty intense.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's not just like Auburn fans with the stuff he said about Freeze last week. It was fan bases all over the league saying, y'all are a bunch of frauds and Kiffin always blows games like this. I mean, it was pretty vitriolic compared to your normal losses.
Well, he sort of asks for it, David.
<I know.
laughs> So what do you think, though? What do you think in Columbia this weekend? I really don't know.
I would say, and it's funny, it is the world of college football. I mean, South Carolina goes to Kentucky and wins. Kentucky
blows
goes to Ole Miss and wins.
Yep.
I think Ole Miss goes to South Carolina and wins. I mean,
probably.
South Carolina, you know, give both of these programs credit for beefing up their defensive lines. I mean, because they've done a good job with that. But I just think, you know, it's kind of just like when in doubt, who's the more talented team? And across the board, that's going to be Ole Miss. So I would probably take Ole Miss like 30-20 in this game, something like that.
Let's talk about I'll break the momentum a little bit. I want to talk about a non-conference game in the SEC this week.
You want to talk about the battle down in Gainesville?
I mean, Billy Napier probably not in a position to absorb a home loss to UCF right now. And I, you know, as much as we love the guy, I don't know. I think the temperature gets turned up on Gus Malzahn if he takes a. He gets beaten down by Colorado at home as a multiple touchdown favorite. He follows that up by looking kind of lifeless in the swamp against this Billy Napier team. I wonder what the temperature's like in Orlando.
Yeah, of course he's already 1-0 against the Gators, winning the Gasparilla Bowl over a roster that had already opted out. This will definitely be a little bit different from that. But you're right. I mean, somebody at some point has to look like the second best team in the state of Florida behind Miami, and right now nobody has looked the part.
Right now, Tom Herman's making an argument.
this is definitely going to be a deal where there's probably going to be more relief for the winner than absolute excitement. I mean, I know it's a big deal for UCF to beat Florida. It'll always be a big deal for UCF to beat Florida, but I agree. I mean, you know, the fact that Colorado not just won but kind of had their way with them last week really kind of erased the good feel of, you know, winning out at TCU and just kind of getting a big league win to start off the year. Not that TCU's a world beater. But it's a sneaky, entertaining. You know, here's what I hope. We had all these, and I know we're talking about Florida versus non-conference, but we had four head-to-head matchups last week that were all one-possession games. You know how this works, guys. Sometimes we test our luck, and we hope for another really great weekend of games, and the games turn out to be poopy.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we will see. I mean, that one, I think that has a chance to be really tight.
I mean, the fact that you got five SEC games this week and the only one that's projected to be a close game, according to the point spread, is Missouri A&M tells me Missouri A&M will probably be one-sided. And then the other four could go down to the wire.
Well, the other one is supposed to be one-sided. Arkansas team that could be, I mean, they could be 5-0, but they're 3-2. I mean, Auburn fans are going, we could be 5-0. Arkansas definitely could be as well, hosting Tennessee, a Tennessee team that, didn't click as well offensively last time out. But Arkansas's got to be, you know, they're probably a little down. So what do you think about this one?
Yeah, I think this is the fact that, you know, this is Arkansas' sixth game in 6 weeks. Tennessee's fresh. That certainly, you know, the availability reports last night, Lance Hurd and John Campbell Jr., Tennessee starting tackles, were no longer ruled as out. So that's a good sign for Tennessee. You know, the thing about that game at Oklahoma is that Tennessee got up on Oklahoma 22-3 early in the third quarter and didn't have their two starting tackles healthy. So they totally, you know, milk the clock and drain the thing. It got a little closer than they wanted, but they, you know, they came out with the 10-point win. I think there's going to be some similar feels to this. I think it's an opportunity for Tennessee's defensive front to take advantage of the Arkansas offensive line. You know, we've kind of already talked about the Deep South and Bama Vandy. I just think we're probably looking at, with this one too, we're probably looking at three games this week that are kind of be in that, you know, 34-13, 31-10 kind of range.
Yeah, it's hard to argue that. Hey, back to the one other thought, though, when you were talking about the Ole Miss South Carolina. Hey, it's Ole Miss, despite the fact that they haven't really been playing a tough schedule, they haven't had an open date, and South Carolina at least is coming in off that open date. That gives me a little thought that this one could be really, really interesting.
Well, and I brought that up. I do a little column. Actually, it runs today, my predictions column in the Times Free Press, and I brought that up about Ole Miss. If you look at their schedule and the teams that are currently ranked, Bama's number one, Texas is number two, Tennessee's number four, and Missouri's number nine. And Ole Miss doesn't have to play any of them.
Right.
So they get a huge break with that. But I pointed out what you just did, that this to me is the trickiest part of their schedule, because in back-to-back weeks they go to South Carolina and to LSU, and both of those teams have open dates before facing them.
And that is their seventh straight game without an open date next week in Baton Rouge. That one I think is going to be really, really difficult.
Yeah, but credit Lane Kiffin for being accurate last week. He was asked about his non-conference schedule, and he said, yeah, I don't really think it prepared us for SEC play. And he was right.
He was right. Yep, he was. David, it's always great. What are your plans for the weekend?
I am heading to Fayetteville. That's actually one of my favorite places to go in the league. I think it's an underrated stadium. It's a beautiful part of the country, northwest Arkansas. I love their fight song. I always try to catch that Razorback mascot. That's one of the wildest-looking things you'll ever see. But, yeah, I'll be up at Fayetteville for, you know, and they've already announced Tennessee, Florida next week at 7 o'clock, so that will be five straight night games for me. Isn't that lovely?
Yeah.
David, if you, I forget, I think we talked about Brahms when you went to Norman, the fast food chain, and I believe they have a location in Fayetteville. If you weren't able to check them out in Norman, or if you were, as a matter of fact, they have a. I was just talking with some Arkansas guys about places to go when you're in Fayetteville, and yeah, they mentioned that they've got a Brahms.
Well, thank you for that. Yeah, the thing about that I'm looking forward to is the weather's supposed to be like 78 or something, so you can actually walk around. In Norman, it was 98. So, I mean, if you walked around too much, you were like, man, I'm going to stink up the entire press box here in about 4 hours.
We had a lot of Oklahoma fans sort of enjoying the – it was cooler weather.
It was comfortable. Everything was perfect until the last 11 minutes.
And I think they were drawing a contrast between how rough it had been the previous weekend.
Well, it is it has been an interesting season for sure on the plains. I guess the one thing Freeze is definitely doing, he and his staff are racking it up
on the recruiting trail. Yep, definitely doing that. Just now you got to hang on to them.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Getting them to commit and getting them to sign, as we all know, are two very different things.
Absolutely. David, great stuff. Always a pleasure spending a little time with you. Have a good trip to Fayetteville, and we look forward to talking next week.
That sounds great. You guys take care as well.
All right, David Pascal again. Check him out on timesfreepress.com for the Chattanooga Times for his work there. And he's got the show Sport Talk on WGOW every day, 2 to 5 our time. We will get to our first break of hour number two. Got time for you to join us before we get to Justin Ferguson at the bottom of the hour, perhaps. Come on in here on the Thursday Drive.
At Reynolds Outdoors, they're all about hunting and fishing and loving the great
This is Coach Hugh Freeze, and you're listening to The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Yep, Bill and Dan here in the studio, and our thanks to David Pascal joining us from Chattanooga, getting his thoughts on the games involving SEC teams this weekend. And, yeah, there are a few of them that I just don't know which way they're going to go. I mean, I'm not sold on Ole Miss yet. When they get things rolling, they can be very impressive. But you brought up a very good point. How's South Carolina going to score a lot of points? Their offense has, I mean, they just, Well, Lenore sells. And they don't throw it very well.
I mean, that was my analysis of the LSU game, which South Carolina probably should have won had it not been for a terrible call on the blindside block when LSU was in danger against South Carolina back in what was that, week three when they won up in Columbia, and that was a game where I wondered how South Carolina was going to score points, and they had 24 at the end of the first half. In that one, went down the field a couple of times. I mean, they benefited from some LSU miscues, but I mean, South Carolina really putting the pressure on with offense. I mean, it was 24-10 early in the second quarter of that game. So I think that I just still can't get past. You know, it feels like an offense that's holding its breath every time it throws the football. And that's a tough
fan base, probably.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough way to go. I mean, whether it's Sellers or it's Robbie Ashford, that seems to be, you know, South Carolina's. You know, it's really run heavy, and if you know, a better team can force them into some run situations or into some pass situations, I think they could. You know, they might find themselves a little bit out of their league.
Yeah. So that one, and we talked about the fact that Texas A&M, who I mean. Yeah, they're close to being 5-0, but they haven't. They still haven't been overly impressive on either side of the ball, but they've won on here.
Bowling Green was the game David was talking about in the previous segment, where there was a game
26-20.
Yeah, A&M played a really close game against a mid-major, but A&M's, you know, it's granted they have not looked overly impressive, but taking Notre Dame down to the wire and beating Arkansas is a good start. For Elko, I really want to see for both A&M and Missouri. You know, this feels like a test if you're close to, you know, the top of the conference, or if you're firmly in the top half of the conference. This is a challenge for both of these teams, and for Missouri, you thought it was the first real challenge of the year because of the schedule, but it turns out Boston College is better than people realize, and Boston College gave Missouri a heck of a scare. And then Vanderbilt probably should have beaten Missouri in that game. So Missouri's coming off two real close calls, and now they're taking the show on the road to Texas A&M. I think that's
when I look at A&M, it's surprising. They're 11th in the conference in total offense. They're 12th in the conference in total defense.
They've made a quarterback change on offense too, which I mean they've gone to they pulled the plug on Klegman for.
I just got a feeling Missouri's about to play a really good ball game.
If you told me both teams played well, I would still think Missouri wins. Like, I think Missouri's probably got the firepower. I think it's going to take A&M forcing Missouri into an off day on offense, and if this game is a little bit like Auburn Georgia in that regard, where it's like, if you told me Georgia played really well, I think Auburn's in a lot of trouble.
Oh yes, absolutely.
And I'd say that's probably
both teams play as well as they can play. Auburn's in big trouble.
Yeah, and I think with A&M Missouri, that's probably true of Missouri can put A&M in some just because of Missouri's offense. If Missouri's offense can really generate a lot of points, I wonder what kind of what kind of response A&M can muster. If this game's ball control, if this game's about the line of scrimmage, then maybe Missouri is the team that's going to find themselves in more of a fight.
Thing has been a bit surprising. Brady Cook he hasn't just been spectacular, hasn't lit it up. I think he's only thrown 4 touchdown passes this year. But still, Missouri is unbeaten to this point. I guess we ought to get to the bottom of the hour break, because we're going to check in with Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer on the other side. So stick with us here on the Thursday Drive. Welcome back into the Drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and we're going to head back to the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Welcome in our regular co-host here on the Thursday Drive. He's already over in the state of Georgia. I don't know what that's that like a state of mind? No, he's in the state of Georgia. That's Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Ferg, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How are y'all?
We're doing pretty well. We talked a lot about quarterback today, which isn't surprising after Auburn adding the commitment, getting the flip from Deuce Knight.
Yeah, I mean, huge deal for Auburn. I mean, I think the thing that's probably hurt Hugh Freeze and this team the most, the program the most so far, is just kind of the quarterback position. Just some uneasiness, uncertainty there. And it took a while. I mean, it took a while for Auburn to get the quarterback they wanted in this 25 class, longer than a lot of people expected. But, hey, if they're able to keep hold of Deuce Knight and sign him, I really like the way he's been described as kind of a lottery ticket, because he's got some stuff you just can't teach. And if he's able to put it all together at a place like Auburn in time, he could. I mean, the ceiling is very, very high. So he's a great fit. He's a fun fit for Auburn and what they want to do on offense moving forward. I would just say for Auburn fans, he's not your typical five-star quarterback, so you might need a little bit of patience, but it could pay off big down the road. I really, really like what he brings to the table in time for Auburn.
Yeah, we talked about that in the first hour. I was reading a couple of scouting reports, and yeah, that's one of the things that I think sometimes fans see that very high ranking and go, well, he should be able to step in, because that used to. Years ago, when people were ranking players, the top players, the ones that had the most stars, it would be projected on a guy who could step in immediately and play. And, you know, I saw one scout that said with Deuce Knight and Walker White, Auburn's got a couple of ridiculously high ceiling guys that both are both coming in, or Walker last year and Deuce next year, will need some refining, but have really, really high ceilings.
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, how many quarterbacks are as tall as Deuce Knight is and can say, hey, I'm a two-time, you know, state champion jumper. I can run a 4.5. I've got an arm that's a cannon. That's the big thing for, you know, kind of Auburn moving forward with Deuce, is just like, if you stay patient and he's able to refine his game, you know, throwing the ball, it's just it's really big. And I think the Walker comp is a very, very good one that I don't know people have talked about quite enough. Kind of the same thing with Walker White. Physically, he's got a lot of tools, and I think that's the thing with him at the quarterback position. Like, you got some stuff you just can't teach with Walker White and Deuce Knight. And in time for Auburn, I mean, like, let those guys battle it out and see who develops and emerges as the guy. You know, down the road, I think it could pay off really, really big. You know, and I think that's exactly what Hugh Freeze, you know, wants. I think, you know, you can teach guys, you know, hey, how to maybe be a more accurate passer, the ins and outs of playing quarterback at this high of a level. You can't really teach a guy to be able to run like a deer and be, you know, super explosive. So I think they've got that with Deuce and with Walker.
Yeah, and you can't teach them to be 6'4", 6'5", if they're, you know, 6'1".
Nope. So can't really do that. So I mean, he's like I said, he's got so many tools that I think it's going to make for a fun scenario here for this Auburn offense in time. You know, just be willing to be a little patient with them. And I would say the same thing about, like, people who've been talking about, you know, Walker White this season for Auburn. It's like, yeah, you got to be patient. These are guys that are going to take some more time, but they could pay off big if they hit.
Justin, I know you're not, like, boots on the ground following recruiting really closely and talking to these guys a lot, but I'm curious, you know, despite a 2-3 start, Auburn has compiled and they've held on to a lot of the to this point, they've held on to a lot of the recruits that they picked up over the summer. We're seeing a lot of first and second year players on the field for Hugh Freeze. Do you feel like that is resonating with guys who are committed for Auburn in the class of 25?
Absolutely. I think Auburn, you know, people that Auburn are recruiting right now are kind of looking at it and saying, you know, they see what happened. They can point to, okay, well, the Hugh Freeze era had to make up for a lot of what they missed, what Auburn missed in recruiting, you know, the likes of, you know, in the Brian Harsin era, I should say. It's just, you know, there's a need for playmakers. There's a need for talent right away. If you're going to compete with Alabama, Georgia, you know, those for Texas, you know, Oklahoma, LSU, those programs, Tennessee, long term, you got to recruit at a high, high level. And to be able to say, like, hey, we can put those guys out there on the field early, I think it's huge. And I would also say this, the fact that Auburn's off to such a slow start on the field this year, such a frustrating start, and they still have the number three class in the country, if they can keep all these guys in the boat and hold on to them, I think that goes to show you that, like, you know, the almighty word of alignment might be a lot better than people are saying that it is kind of nationally about Auburn. Like, you know, people are willing to you know, pony up the NIL money and you really sell Auburn into a place that gets kind of talent like this. And I don't think you do that if you're just a typical team that's, you know, having a bad losing skid, you know, these streak of losing seasons. I don't think every team can do that. And I think it takes a lot of patience and a lot of foresight, but if it works, it could be really big for Auburn long-term. This is not an average team that's, you know, maybe staring down the barrel of a fourth straight losing season.
And talking with Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here, and last Saturday's loss, Justin, is probably, I don't guess it's probably, it's the most painful one thus far this season. I mean, because in that one, Auburn appeared to be the better team. I mean, and they had the lead and had the ball in the fourth quarter, yet still couldn't come away with a win.
Yeah, I mean, Bill, you know this. 11-point lead with 11 minutes to go in your own stadium with the ball in your hand. You got to win that game. You got to find what you got to do, whatever it takes to win that game. And I think Auburn's decision making in that game down the stretch from the top down was just poor, just really, really poor. And it cost you the game. I don't think Auburn's effort, I don't think the play of its players specifically got them in trouble. There were missed opportunities and all that, but I think a lot of the issues Auburn had against Oklahoma that ultimately were their undoing, and you can go back to the first half, the missed opportunities there. It's a lot of decision-making miscues that really came back and haunted them. Auburn should have kept running the ball in that fourth quarter. They should have never put Peyton Thorne in that position to throw incompletions, or better yet, that interception down the stretch that led to the pick six. It was the difference in the game. So that's super frustrating. And that's the thing that I think, you know, we got to look at Auburn moving forward, is that this is a better football team than it was last season. However, it's 2-3. It doesn't look better on the scoreboard. It doesn't look better in the win-loss record, which is what matters the most. And if you're a program that has had several straight losing seasons and you have a very frustrated fan base, it just, you know, the progress you make, the improvements you make on the field can seem empty. It can seem really hollow. And because Auburn fans are frustrated with the way things have been going, and you know, you can't blame them, right? You know, it would be something if we were talking about, hey, Auburn won these games, but I don't know if they look that much better. Instead, you have the inverse where you were looking better, but you're not winning. And, like, you know, knowing that the schedule's only going to get tougher from here, that's a very, very frustrating spot to be in for a fan base.
It's funny. I mean, we were just talking with David Pascal a little while ago, and we're talking about a couple of teams that have won, but you don't really know how good are they. I mean, obviously there's Ole Miss, but Missouri, yeah. Texas A&M, it's like they haven't been that impressive, but they're winning. And, yeah, I'm sure their fan bases are much happier with, okay, maybe we'll find out, but at least we're getting wins.
Yep, absolutely. And that's the thing, is like, I look at this Saturday against Georgia, you know, Auburn took Georgia down to the wire last season. I know it was at Jordan Hare, and it was Carson Beck's first road start and all that, but, like, they took Georgia down to the wire last year, and they didn't even have any sort of passing game, right? I mean, Auburn's offense is a better offense. I think they're much more explosive in the passing game, and I think they're more consistent in the running game. I think their defense has shown improvement at times, that they can be a pretty good unit when they're kind of clicking. It's a better football team than they were last year, but they're already 2-3.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're already 2-3, what do we say going into season? This is the time where, hey, take advantage of these home games, take advantage of these matchups, and it'll prepare you for the tough stretch ahead. Well, you didn't do that, so you're going to get to a point now where you are in that tough stretch and you don't have the goodwill of the wins to back you up. And that, I'm not saying it's going to get you freeze fired this year or anything like that, but it just adds on to the frustration.
Yeah, now you've got to go to Athens, where Georgia, smarting after that loss last week, you know, I was thinking, boy, they could really be down when I looked up and it's 28-0 in the second quarter. But they came back, nearly won that ball game. They know what they need to do to correct things. And it's homecoming in Athens. It's a place where Auburn hasn't won in nearly two decades.
Yeah, Justin, we recorded with the 247 guys last night, Ben and Jordan. And it's remarkable because they shine some light on it too. But I would have thought Georgia was going to struggle offensively. I would have thought Georgia would have struggled to replace Brock Bowers and Ladd McConkey because of how much, you know, that they were the primary options for Carson Beck. Georgia's passing offense looks fine.
Yeah,
it's their inability to run the ball that's probably their biggest question mark on offense right now.
Absolutely, and for Auburn, that's priority number one. Keep that running game down. I think Auburn's done an excellent job this season against running backs. You look at Jay Knott, you look at the big dude from Arkansas, you look at Oklahoma's running back last week. Auburn's done a really good job of limiting those guys. You know, you're talking about, you know, 2.5, 3, 3.5 yards a carry. That's effective play. We know Beck is not the scrambler that the guys Auburn has faced is, so that helps you out a lot. But we also know this is a Mike Bobo offense. We talked to Zeke Walker earlier this week. He said, look, we know we've got to slow down the running game and try to make them one-dimensional, because if they feel like they can go back and forth between the run and the pass, they'll pick you apart. They're big and they can be explosive out of heavy sets. I mean, they are that pro-style type of attack. So, you know, slowing down Georgia's passing attack is easier said than done, but you don't want Georgia to have their breakout game on the ground with Trevor Etienne against Auburn. And to their credit, I think Auburn's done a good job of stopping the run earlier in the year, slowing those games down. And then just get it into that point and say, okay, Carson Beck, you need to drop back and try to beat us through the air. And they don't have McConkey and they don't have Brock Bowers. That passing game has been pretty good, but Beck had some turnovers last week, got affected by some pressure at times. And, you know, talking to Jordan and Ben last night, you know, they're still trying to wait for, like, who's going to be the next big guy for them at wide receiver and who's going to really, really step up. They're still kind of searching for that right now. So for Auburn, you're going up against an offense that wants to be balanced but hasn't been able to hit their stride yet in that. And also, they just have been slow starters. Mm-hmm. They have not scored really a point against an FBS team in the first quarter this season. And they got off two incredibly slow starts against Clemson and Kentucky and Alabama in terms of the yardage. So Auburn, like, can they take advantage of that? It's easier said than done, too. And I think on the flip side of this matchup, you're talking about where Auburn struggled here. Here's a crazy stat. Auburn has not scored more than 10 points or had 300 or more yards in Sanford Stadium since 2009. Mm-hmm. We have seen good Auburn offenses go there and just crumble in years past. So for Auburn, if you want to kind of get a test to, hey, could this offense legitimately be for real, especially if they can stop turning the ball over and do a better job of finishing drives, can they be real for real long term this season? If they go into Athens and actually move the ball and put some points on the board, maybe so.
Yeah, it's incumbent on Auburn to get off to a quick start. That place it can turn ugly very quick with a capital UG there. I mean, so Auburn need to get off to a quick start. They need to be, you know, as protective as they can be without being ultra conservative over there in Athens. What are you hearing on Alex McPherson? Folks, a couple of folks have asked me about him, where I see he's listed as probable now.
Yeah, he was listed as available last week too. I wonder how ready he is. Mm-hmm. He still is not near. I mean, he wasn't a big guy to begin with, but he's still, like, watching him. He still looks like he lost a lot of that weight, maybe a lot of that power from earlier in the year. I wouldn't be surprised if Auburn rolls him out on Saturday. He seems to be ramping up. But again, you do have an off week coming up. You get to the second half of the season. It wouldn't shock me if we see Towns McGoo again one more time and then see if you can really turn McPherson loose in the second half of the season. But he's progressing in the right direction. Be very interesting to see what he ends up doing. So it's still kind of in the dark there. I haven't seen or noticed anything largely different than what we've heard and seen the last few weeks with him. But it, you know, no news is good news, I guess, for a guy that, you know, you want to continue to see be on the right track.
Justin, great stuff as always. Let everybody know what you got coming up at the Observer.
Yeah, absolutely. So Dan alluded to it just a moment ago, but our podcast with Jordan Hill and Ben Wolk of Dogs 247 was a lot of fun previewing the Auburn-Georgia game. We also talked some Deuce Knight in there as well. You can check that out. Big mailbag tomorrow talking about Auburn's offense, what can be fixed moving forward, all that good stuff. Had some preview stories about this Auburn and Georgia game, get you prepped for that matchup on the Observer. And also Q&A with Charles Barkley earlier this week. That was a lot of fun. So you can check all that out at auburnobserver.com. Going to be in Athens on Saturday covering whatever happens between Auburn and Georgia, and then we'll do our recap podcast on Sunday. So it's a great time to sign up, auburnobserver.com. Everything gets emailed to you as soon as it drops.
Sounds good. Thanks, Justin. Have a good week, and we'll see you next week.
Yeah, I will save me a seat Saturday, Justin.
He's supposed to have
I'll
assigned.
See what I can do. Appreciate you guys.
All right, take care, Justin. All right, we'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
Sip, spike, put.
Day Drive, our thanks to Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer and David Pascal from the Chattanooga Times Free Press, both joining us this hour. One of the things we were talking about, you know, how on the field could affect recruiting. Interesting, see reports there on AuburnSports.com that two of Auburn's highly touted commits for the 25 class, Eric Winters from Enterprise and Quan Fagans from Thompson, both visiting Georgia this weekend.
We got some good stuff tonight. I mean, you got Mets Brewers on ESPN. That's about to start. Texas State at Troy on ESPN2. That's about to start as well. You got Bucks Falcons on Prime Video tonight. Baker Mayfield playing good football for the Buccaneers. First place in the NFC South. They'll play a division game tonight too. So some good sports on the tube tonight, and we'll ease into the college football weekend tomorrow.
Yes, we will, and Don Dunn will join us as well. Hope you will too. But we're out of time here on the Thursday edition of The Drive.
Stay tuned.
That's right. The replay of Monday night's Tiger Talk coming up next on ESPN 106.7. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here. Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying, skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.